Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY 2026 conference call of Northern Arc Capital, hosted by Ambit Capital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Thank you, and over to you.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of Ambit Capital, I would like to welcome you all to the third quarter FY 2026 earnings call for Northern Arc Capital. Joining us from the management today, we have Mr. Ashish Mehrotra, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Atul Tibrewal, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Partha Sarathy Ralbandi, Group Risk Officer and Governance Head, and Mr. Chetan Parmar, Head of Investor Relations. I would like to thank the management for the opportunity to host this earnings call. We can now begin the call with opening remarks from Mr. Ashish Mehrotra, post which we can open the floor for questions. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Ashish.
Hey, thank you, Raghav. Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. I'm delighted to welcome you to today's call. Thank you for joining us for Northern Arc Capital's conference call to discuss our performance for the quarter ended 31st December 2025. I'm also joined by my colleagues, like Raghav said earlier, Atul Tibrewal, our CFO, Partha Sarathy, our Group Risk and Governance Head, Jigar Sehta, Head of Strategy, and Chetan Parmar, Head for Investor Relationship. I'm very pleased to share that we achieved two significant milestones during the quarter. First, we crossed the assets under management milestone of 15,000 crore, and second, we reported our highest-ever quarterly profit after tax of over 100 crore at about 101 crore, the strongest in the Northern Arc Capital history. Turning to the broader environment, we continued to witness healthy consumption-led demand during the quarter, supported by reforms such as GST, rate cuts, festival spending, and even all of this in the midst of geopolitical uncertainties, tariff-related pressures, and so on. The Reserve Bank of India also took a supportive step by reducing the repo rate by 25 basis points to 5.25%, which is expected to further aid domestic demand and credit growth. While we view the quarter performance with optimism, it is important to acknowledge the headwind facing the sector. Stress continues to build in the unsecured business loan and the small-ticket LAP segments. The retail securitization volume year-to-date remained lower than last year by about 7%. The offshore funding participation has also stayed muted, and liquidity continued to be challenging as the repo rate cuts have not yet fully translated into MCLR reduction from broader capital flows. These challenges have impacted NBFC across the spectrum, and even as the sector continues to play a critical role in supporting the Indian economy. At the same time, there are clear signs of improvement in microfinance. We are witnessing a revival in both growth and credit cost. Retail and HNI participation strengthening the liquidity through private NCD market, where Northern Arc remains an active market maker. RBI, to boost liquidity and reduce cost, also provided support. As a result, sector is expected to continue to grow at about 15%-17%. Against this backdrop, our AUM posted a strong growth of about 23% on a YoY basis, 7% on quarter-on-quarter to reach 15,121 crore, outpacing the industry and reflecting sustained momentum. Growth was driven by direct-to-customer business, which accounted for about 56% of total AUM as of December 2025. The D2C AUM, as we call direct-to-customer business segment, grew by about 29% on a YoY basis from 6,767 to about 8,492 crore, in line with the strategy of growing direct-to-retail business at around 30%. Within D2C, the consumer finance continued to demonstrate strong momentum with AUM growth of approximately 45% on a YoY basis to about 4,226 crore, supported by festive demand and impact of GST rate cuts leading to better consumptions. This improvement in consumption demand sustained throughout the quarter and continued into the quarter for FY26, providing continued visibility for strong growth momentum. MSME remain a key growth engine for Northern Arc Capital, with portfolio growing at about 41% on YoY basis to about 3,292 crores. This growth has been largely driven by expansion of our physical footprint within the additional with addition of 17 new branches during the quarter. Given the significant underpenetration of MSME credit to MSME, our ongoing investment in distribution, people, infrastructure positions as well for sustained and sustainable and scalable growth in the coming quarters. In rural finance, we consciously calibrated, like I said earlier in our calls, we consciously calibrated our microfinance portfolio over the past 6 quarters, starting from June 2024. The incremental par zero accretion has reverted to the pre-stress level, which is a very good sign. Over two-thirds of our MFI book comprises of loan originated under the new MFIN guardrails, and nearly 55% of our portfolio is covered under CGFMU. With our 30-plus DPD improved sequentially to about 80 basis points in December, this sustained improvement and supported by strong growth on ground given our infrastructure gives us confidence to scale this business back in a calibrated manner going forward. Rural disbursement in Q3 stood at about 260 crores, with December doing close to about 100 crores, which is in line with what we were doing during the, before the stress environment we started witnessing in the Q1 24. We retain our operational footprint at about 278 branches and have about 1,800 employees. We will further strengthen it as we go forward. Our intermediate retail business, part of our Credit Solutions platform, has also recorded a healthy growth of 17% on YoY basis, despite the unfavorable global environment. Indian economy has demonstrated strong resilience and well-positioned to deliver healthy growth going forward. Our fee-based businesses, a key differentiator for Northern Arc, like we keep on saying, continues to complement our lending operation. Placement volume grew by about 73% YoY and 43% quarter-on-quarter to about 3,669 crores. Our performing credit fund grew by about 15% YoY to about 3,207 crores. This translates into strong fee income growth of about 50% on YoY basis, and quarter-on-quarter to about 32 crores. This performance underscored a strategic focus in building a comprehensive credit solution ecosystem, leveraging capital-light fee streams along with a balance sheet and lending model. More importantly, lending are enabling and leveraging our technology stacks and our risk capabilities. We spoke about Nimbus, our B2B platform, which has enabled over 1 trillion of credit flow through the platform, and POS, our API-based on-lending and co-lending platform, where we underwrite about 20,000 to 25,000 loans a day. Our AltiFi, our bonds platform, as a registered OBPP platform, provides fixed income investment opportunities to over 80,000 registered investors on the platform. Our proprietary machine learning-based underwriting scorecards, known as NeoScore, which essentially helps people to select the right set of customers, both in terms of ticket size, price, default probability, and so on. With these platforms we were built for our own use, we are seeing early signs of monetization, giving us confidence that we can become an independent fee-accretive business over a time. Turning to asset quality, we continue to follow a prudent risk management framework and a conservative provisioning philosophy. During the quarter, credit cost increased to about 130 crores, driven primarily by the higher provisioning in the consumer finance portfolio and some increase in the small ticket secured and unsecured business loans. The high credit costs were attributable to internal assessment of ECL for digital business, resulting in recognition of one-time cost of about 23 crores, which is less than 60 basis points on an annualized basis. Excluding that, our credit cost is about 2.9% for the quarter three. The risk-adjusted yield remained stable at 13.7% in Q3, and unchanged YOY, marginally better by about 10 basis points versus previous quarter two, reflecting effective risk calibration and pricing discipline. On a cumulative basis, credit cost for first 9 months stands at about 3%. As we enter the final quarter, we expect the credit cost to remain stable within 2.7 to 3% range. Overall, these developments gives us confidence that we are well positioned to achieve a guided AUM growth of upward of 20% for this year. With that, I'd like to hand over to Atul to walk you through our financials in detail. Atul, over to you.
Thank you, Ashish, and good evening, everyone. I appreciate you joining us for the Northern Arcs Q3 FY26 earnings call. Let me walk you through the financial performance. Our assets under management stood at 15,121 crores, reflecting a growth of 23% YOY and 7% Q&Q. Within the AUM mix, the direct-to-customer business contributed 56%, with MSME finance at 22%, consumer finance at 28%, and MFI consciously calibrated at 6%. The net interest income for Q3 FY26 stood at 371 crores, which is up by 39% YOY. NIMs for Q3 FY26 improved by 60 basis points Q on Q at 9.9%. On the interest rate environment, despite a cumulative 125 bps policy rate cut by RBI, the transmission has been gradual, with the one-year bank MCLR declining by only 25 to 30 basis points on an average, reflecting a lag effect and some tightening in the money market liquidity. On a year-on-year basis, Northern Arc Capital's cost of fund improved meaningfully, declining to 8.5% in Q3 FY26 from 9.6% in Q3 FY25, representing a reduction of 90 basis points. We expect some additional benefit in COF in Q4, supported by MCLR reset on a significant portion of our existing borrowing. Fee and other income grew by almost 49% YOY and 50% Q&Q to Rs. 32 crores, mainly on account of strong growth in the placement volumes. Net revenue, including the fee income, rose 39% YOY to Rs. 403 crores. Our operating expense ratio for Q3 FY26 was stable at 3.7%. The company is fully compliant with the new labor code and there is no material impact on the employee cost. Pre-provisioning operating profit for the quarter grew by 51% YOY and 24% quarter-on-quarter to Rs. 265 crores. GNPA and NNPA was 1.36% and 0.69% respectively. Profit after tax for Q3 FY26 increased by 33% YOY and 10% quarter-on-quarter to Rs. 101 crores. ROA for the quarter saw marginal uptick quarter-on-quarter to reach 2.7%. ROE for the quarter increased by 60 basis points quarter-on-quarter to 10.7%. On the liabilities front, in line with our debt strategy and AUM growth plans, we have continued to diversify our funding base with a clear focus on long-term sources. Liquidity remains comfortable with positive cumulative mismatch across the time buckets. As of December 31st, 2025, we held surplus liquidity of almost 1,400 crores with a mix of cash and undrawn bank sanctions. Total borrowing at the end of the quarter stood at 11,200 crores with approximately 65% linked to variable interest rate, positioning us well to benefit from the ongoing decline in the interest rate market. Our funding mix remains well diversified with 25% sourced from offshore and DFI partners and the balance 75% from domestic banks, institutions and capital market. Our incremental cost of fund in Q3 was 8.6%, down from 9.6% same period last year. Tangible net worth stood at Rs. 3,788 crores, up 11% YOY. We have strengthened the balance sheet materially. Our debt-to-equity ratio improved from 3.9 times in March 24 to 3 times as of December 2025. Capital adequacy remains quite strong at 23.1%, well above the regulatory requirement, giving us ample headroom to grow the balance sheet over the next 3 years. Thank you very much, and we would now like to open up for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take a first question from the line of Digant Haria from Green Edge Wealth. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi team. Congratulations on reaching two important milestones. My question is, two parts to my question. First is, if we look at this quarter, our net income has gone up quite substantially. And in line with that, our provisions have also gone up substantially. So, because of this digital lending business, should we look at Northern Arc, as net income minus provisions as a number that we try to strive for? Or, if you can just explain us this, because otherwise, it just seems that provisions have gone up. But, in isolation, it looks like that. But if you look at net income minus provisions, that number we are at best ever in last 5 quarters. So just any thoughts here, because, otherwise the reporting becomes confusing for us.
Hey, Digant, so good to have you and, very insightful question indeed. Like we've been saying in many of our conversations with you prior, the way we look at the digital business is saying, how do we optimize the risk-adjusted yields? I think that's the best way to look at it, because, in a high consumption-led demand where you provide convenient financing solution, you look at various cohorts at various points in time and try and see how you get better risk-adjusted return by providing superior product to customers. So, and like I said, our risk-adjusted return broadly remains stable while the yields have improved. So we've had compensating marginally higher costs, but that's perfectly fine as long as we're holding the guidance on the risk-adjusted basis. And that is where we look at that business since the very beginning, because we believe that's the best way to look at it. How much return are you making after adjusting for risk?
Great. So Ashish, you don't see any deterioration, especially in that consumer or digital lending business, right? There is no
If I look at,
we took some extra provisions also, 23 crores. So just okay. You can.
We continue doing that. The objective is that you continue to look at playing between the near prime segments and try and create many sets of product solutions between 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, financing for education, financing for convenience, and so on and so forth. So there are certain cohorts and certain geographies, if I get technical, between the risk band, which try and get you maybe significantly better yield, but also come with a compensatingly higher credit cost. And, idea is to optimize and look at how do you make better risk-adjusted return. So I think that's the only metrics we look at it, and that's the metrics we are very obsessed with when we work along with the risk digital teams.
This division would have made 3-4% ROAs, right? We should look at the ROAs and we would be in the bad.
That's the only way to look at it. And that's a very profitable business.
Right. Perfect. So that's there. The second part of question is on the MSME piece, where I think the NPAs have gone up a bit, credit costs have gone up a bit. And I think it's an industry-wide phenomenon which we are seeing in that smaller portion of the LAP. So where are we in terms of our evolution curve? Is this credit cost cycle for us starting, or we are also somewhere in middle and we hope to improve in the coming quarters? Any color here you can give on this?
No, so there are two sides to it in MSME. The small ticket MSME is we are seeing higher degree of power accretion. Having said so, our average ticket size is upward of 12 to 13 lakhs. So we really don't play in a real micro 2 to 4 lakh, 5 lakh loan. But following the conservative piece, we did seeing higher roll forward rate in the past. But now we've actually seen a bounce rate has come down to about 27-28%. So I think as things stabilizes, like I said earlier, the first one to blow to say that there is a little bit of stress in this underserved segment is largely visible in the microfinance sector. The three most sets of product which those customers have, one is the unsecured business loan or a quasi-secured or a secured business loan. The second is a little bit of personal loan and the gold loan. The good thing is the gold, the way the gold is appreciated, I don't think there is any stress in that sector because the gold price has appreciated as a consequence. You know, the interest servicing and the principal payment would have happened or would have through the realization or liquidation of the security. In case of unsecured business loans, I think the credit cost is marginally higher. As the MFI stabilizes and we're seeing massive improvement across the sector in our own piece, first time we had a negative par zero accretion. This means I'm doing better than what we were doing in December 23. If that happening, we will see in a couple of quarters this improvement on these lines also. In more importantly, while we see higher provisioning, our mortgage is 100% perfect. We do only registered or MODT registered mortgages. So while I do assess customer income because they may not have income on the paper, so there is an individual underwriting which is also at two stage, one by the credit officer on the ground and second using a data analytics by a centralized credit team who looks at the file again. But we then ensure there is a perfect title and there is a mortgage which gets registered. Unlike in this segment where people who do this as a quasi-secured just by submission of title deed or not looking at full 13 year of the title search, we do a perfect mortgage. So, you know, while there could be higher provisioning, but over a period of time, this business should be less than 1.5 to 1.7 times credit cost.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ashish, for the detailed answers. And then we hope that, you know, you hit a century, you keep on scoring more runs in the coming quarters. Thank you. Thank you.
Also hoping for that. Thank you. Thanks for your...
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Pawan Kumar from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So, three questions. Number one, can you please give the incremental cost of funds for the quarter? Number two, can you please explain jump in other expenses quarter on quarter? Third thing is, can you explain the assignment transactions that we have done this quarter? There seems to be like, both the jump in the revenue from assignment and also like the, you know, the credit cost. Are these two related?
So yeah. I think the first two I'll refer to to Atul because he'll give you more insightful answer. But let me tell you strategically the answer to your third point. Our assignment is less than 5% of overall revenue and of overall AUM. Unlike our peers, we are pretty conscious that we will keep it at less than 5 to 6% or 7% of our overall assets under management and of overall revenue piece. So it's done technically also, you know, like I said in many calls earlier, we started selling down or doing assignment of our book on the MFI book way back in April or June 24 idea because we were seeing it's best to get it off the balance sheet than to carry it. So we tactically look at these things, looking at how we would like to carry the risk forward and where we think we can optimize the risk-adjusted return. Atul, do you want to go through the two questions on cost?
Sure.
And
first, I'll cover the question on the
OPEX. Just one thing before you go to the other two questions. I have just a follow-up on this. The 692 crore that you have transferred this quarter, is this mainly from the MFI book?
No, that will include it'll include MFI plus some bit of MSME. That's for the full 9 month period, correct?
This quarter we would have sold close to 300 quarters,
yeah.
300 crores, but for the entire 9 months we would have sold close to 600 crores.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Yeah. So, on the question of OPEX, if you look at our DuPont, our OPEX has been quite steady at 3.6%. Last year, 9 months, FY25, we were at 3.6%. And 9 months FY26 also we are at 3.7%. It has slightly increased in quarter three to 3.7%. But again, this is in line with what we had shown in quarter two. So there has been no increase as such in the OPEX. The way, the servicer fee is presented in our published account is that it is shown as part of the OPEX. But, in the DuPont, it is netted off from my interest income. So the servicer fee has increased a bit, but otherwise my overall OPEX has remained constant at 3.6%. On the question of the incremental cost of fund, as I had mentioned in my speech, that our incremental cost of fund is currently at 8.6%, and this has come down by close to 90 basis points if we have to compare with this similar period last year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take a next question from the line of Arvind R. from Sundaram Alternates. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity and congratulations on the good set of numbers in the face of tough environment. It's a follow-up on MSME business, especially the direct business. I would like to understand how the early delinquency indicators are shaping up there. Is there any improvement or is there any stabilization there? I know NPA numbers have been displayed in presentation. I'd like to understand how early delinquency indicators are shaping up in that business particularly. And another question which I found surprising was in branches, sequentially branches have declined a bit. Can you help me understand what is happening there?
Yeah, we have seen significant traction in the collections during the last quarter. On the newer cohorts, newer vintages, basically the disbursements in the last 12 to 15 months, the roll forwards or the PAR also is lower than what it was during the earlier cohorts. To that extent, what we are seeing is the historical more than 12 months back origination, but collection effort has improved significantly and the newer cohorts are performing better. So hopefully things would be better in the coming quarters.
Actually, we're seeing a sequential improvement in our collection efficiency across the buckets, fair to say that. And it's also when we look at the new vintage book on a 6-year MOB, that's performing significantly better on a 30 DPD, 1+30 DPD. So I think that there is a good piece, and we continue to remain focused to grow that business. Those are important lines of business for us to grow. It's also a long-term earning annuity book. I'd like to grow that.
Arvind? I had another question on branches. There was a small decline in branches. I was just wondering, what is happening there?
So like I said, we did add a couple of branches on MSME, but we optimize our branch network in a rural finance business because that was the call. That's perfectly fine. We plan to add about 50 plus branches in the coming quarter. So I think we are perfectly fine. You continue to optimize the geography where you think the concentration of customers is less, where you should go. And also with the new guardrails, MFI of MFIN, we need to ensure we are actively positioned where we find larger number of underbanked and underpenetrated places.
Yeah, sure. I just last request from my side, sir. Especially when asset quality issues in some certain segments that happens, if you can also provide the early delinquency data in presentation, it will be very helpful to understand how things could shape up in the subsequent quarters. Thank you.
Yeah, sir. Sure. We can get Chetan to share. By the way, we also publish, given the amount of credit solution we provide, we do publish a sectoral report of what we are seeing in not only in our books, but more importantly across, 100, 200 partners across the 5 or 6 sectors where we operate. And I think that's available on the website. So we will have both of that data. That data could be pretty useful for you to gain insights on how the books are performing across consumer, MSME, rural, vehicle finance, affordable housing. I'm happy to share that with you, Chetan. Can you please connect with that within share? Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We'll take our next question from the line of Sameer Bise from Diamond Asia. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just wanted to ask on this provisioning bit on the digital portfolio. So the presentation says it's more like a one-time. So how should one think about this provisioning trend on an ongoing basis? That's one. And secondly, in context of that, how to look at PCR on stage 3 and stage 2 both?
Further, you want to take it?
Yeah. This is, we had reviewed the all the cohorts that we have in the portfolio and the process that we follow for computation of the credit cost and the FLDG that is available on the cohorts, etc., and the claims on the claims, more claims, and a bit of a reconciliation over a period of time. It's not this particular quarter. It's over a period of time, and the impact of that, while that is not pertaining to this quarter, when we recognize that there is an impact that needs to be recognized, we recognize it, and that is come to 23.4. It is not an indication of the 23.4 coming every quarter.
And the second is you need to look at it on a risk-adjusted basis. The number broadly remains the same.
No, fair enough. So this is more of a catch-up of back book on when you kind of reassess the post the FLDG. Is that a fair takeaway?
That's correct. When we look at all the our commercial arrangements with the partners in terms of the digital lending portfolio, this is the post FLDG credit cost or the FLDG claims that where that correction needed to be made.
So then, on an ongoing basis, if the margin gains were to kind of sustain, we should actually see the risk-adjusted margin probably expanding.
That's the endeavor. As you continue to select better sets of, as the data experiences improve, you are able to identify better cohort of customers. So eventually, cost is higher, but you're still able to hold the pricing. So as we go on quarter basis, we should look at improvement in that number. The way we look at it is also saying, what are we going to make on a risk-adjusted basis? I think those are two pieces. Identify a better set of cohorts for us to target and offer convenient solution and also ensure that we have better outcomes. I think that's where it is.
And on the PCR basis, coverage?
PCR is more because of the change in the mix in the balance sheet. As the because all our unsecured loans, we write off on 90 DPD. So what is there on PCR is only the stage 1, stage 2, which is coming on account of what we have on intermediate retail book and a little bit of MSME book.
Yeah.
Secured book and the intermediate retail book.
As the proportion of the secured loans go up under the stress, obviously for the secured, the provision coverage requirement would be lower compared to non-secured loans. If the secured book is actually underperforming, the provision coverage ratio will look lower. It's basically because the recoverability of that is quite high.
Sure. Okay. Thank you so much. Congrats on a good set and all the best. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Shaleen Kapadia from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on hitting an all-time high PAT. Sir, I had two questions. So firstly, on yields. So why has our yields jumped so much in 3Q FY26 almost by 80 basis points despite a very minimal change in the AUM mix? And secondly, sir, my question was on asset quality. So can you just give us some color on why credit cost has increased in MSME segment? Is it related to any particular geography or anything like that? So any color there would be helpful. And so second part to that asset quality question. So basically our stage 2 has decreased substantially in this quarter. So can we say that we have basically arrested forward flows and hence we can see improvement in credit cost from 4Q onwards? So those are my questions, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, the MSME PAR increase is something which is across the industry, and if any, we are in line with the industry or better. It's not a specific geography related issue to that extent. This is something which is which is in pretty much in line with the industry, and there's nothing specific in our portfolio because of which there is an impact. That is one. Second is that in terms of the overall credit cost, our endeavor would be to contain it under close to 3% or under 3%. The way we would want to look at it is that is something that we will try to keep under check under 3%. However, the objective, as Ashish mentioned earlier, is always to optimize the risk-adjusted return. And to that extent, we would continue to have to focus on the risk-adjusted return and keep the credit cost under check. The way I look at it, unilaterally reducing credit cost is not something that is the objective. If you do that and impact the yield on that's not really a good outcome. Optimizing risk-adjusted return is what we focus on.
And sir, why our yield has increased in 3Q?
I think the yield is, like we said, is function of mix. We chose certain cohorts in the consumer finance space as a combination of the mix change between the intermediate retail and the direct-to-customer business, and the cohorts in the digital lending business would have given a higher yield. It also came with a little bit of higher credit cost. So we continue to calibrate and ensure we make better risk-adjusted return. That's the objective.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next question is from Divyansh Agarwal from Ionic Asset Managers. Please go ahead. Divyansh, please unmute your line and go ahead with your question, please. Since there is no response, we'll move on to the next question from Sanjay Ladha from Bastion Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So just wanted to understand the business dynamic of Nautilus as to between our own lending and the gross transaction volume. So what is the fees charged on the, you know, placement, disbursement and funds book? And where does we show this fees charge in our P&L? Is it shown in the interest income? And if that's the case, what is the percentage of, you know, that's interest income in that case?
Yes, thanks. Let me clarify. If there is a fee linked to the loan dispersal, that get amortized over the tenor of the loan. What you see in our PPR, which what Atul spoke to, fee and other income of 32 crores for last quarter, that includes the fee we earn from our placement business, which is about anywhere between 21 to 25 basis point. Then we earn about 110 basis point of fee on our assets under management in our funds business, which is CAT 2, CAT 3 AIF and PMS business, where our assets under management is about 3,200 crores. We do performing credit funds across in the same sectors where we operate in the similar segment. And the other fee comes from, you know, NPOS and scorecards and so on and so forth. So I think those are the three large heads of the fee. Fee which is linked to the loan being disbursed is get amortized as part of the interest along over the life of the loan. It is there on a separate line. You will see that separate line as a fee on a separate line in the financial.
I just wanted to clarify that in the interest income, the major chunk of the interest is just AUM of our B2C lending. Or do we include the, which you said that, you know, the management fees as well from the other cohort?
Sorry, I'm not clear. Can I request you to, if you can
re-articulate
the seventh line at our end?
Sir, just wanted to understand that this fee, the AUM which we have, like 15,000 odd crore of AUM, and the interest income which we show on the P&L, that is part of only of the AUM book, or there would be other part as well on the interest income line item which we showed?
Only of the lending exposure on the NBFC balance sheet. In consolidation, you do see a fee income which comes from 100% owned subsidiary, which is Northern Arc Investment Managers, which is our funds business, which appears in the fee line.
So in the investor presentation, the interest income is 533 crores for quarter two and 602 crores for quarter three. So this 602 crores is on a total AUM of 15,121 crores. So this is the on-balance sheet book that we have. And this fee, this interest income has been earned on that book.
Sir, thank you for the clarity. Sir, my another question would be on, since, you know, the net interest margin has inched up slightly higher, just wanted to understand where we, you know, in a longer term basis, what is the sustainable range we see on that side? Anything to look at?
So I think if you go to the viewpoint, you will see that our interest income, net interest income, is about anywhere from 9.3 to about 9.9%, which is where we ended last quarter. We make fees. Fees gives us another kicker, taking our loaded NIM to about 10.7, which in last quarter was 9.9. And I think that our endeavor is, as our mix improves with higher composition of direct customer business, from where we were 2 or 3 years ago, we moved to now 56%. And also, as we continue to build our funds business, our fee franchise, our bonds platform, which will create more accretive fee, my forward-looking view would be, if we can see what we see in contribution on the fee at 90 basis points, should get to about 110, 120 basis points. And, you know, net interest margin anywhere between 9.5 to 10, 10 and a quarter is a very good for us to play as the mix goes from 56 to 65 and 70%. I think that's where it is. So that gives you a better piece, and our objective is to, over a period of time, get to 3, 3.5 return on assets over the next 4 to 6 quarters.
Thank you so much, sir. Sir, another, my last question would be on, you know, the credit cost inch up across the MSME, consumer and rural side. Is the stress has been gone out? Do we see further inch up going forward, or how one should think of? Because as you in the starting comment, you already said that you've seen the growth and you know, credit cost going down from here on. So just wanted to understand how going forward, how should we?
Sure, thank you. If you follow the market for the last six quarters. The first, we saw elevation of credit costs on account of over-leveraging and bunch of other stuff in the MFI segment. From where we stand today, both at an industry level and our own balance sheet, while our balance sheet on the rural is not very large, we've seen a massive improvement, and our portfolio today performing better than what portfolio was performing in December 23 or January 24. This means there was a period of stress. That stress has got passed out. We're seeing improvement in collection, in recoveries, and more importantly, we are able to collect more money than the money than people who are not paying. So our par zero accretion has now become negative. I think that's where it is. Consumer finance for us is, our strategy is to, since we run a digital convenient financing solution, is to find interesting cohort of customers and ensure we make better risk-adjusted returns. There is, because of the stress in the MFI, little bit of higher stress in the unsecured, in the small ticket business loan, while that's a very small part of our book. As a consequence, we've seen higher degree of provisioning there. But my sense is over next 2 to 3 quarters, that should continue to show an improvement in that line.
Thank you so much, sir, for the patient dialogue. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a next question from Preet Nagarsheth from Wealth Advisor. Please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, and congrats on wonderful numbers. I'm sorry to ask this, but again, on the MSME side, one of the other peers on the lower ticket size, say between 2 to 5 lakhs, was saying that the behavior was the problem, and they are not providing for everything, and they are working to improve the behavior. So could you shed some color on how are you going about navigating that space?
To just clarify, as I said it earlier, We do not operate at 2-3 lakh segments. Our average ticket size is about 12 to 14 lakhs. While we do assess income of the individual by an independent risk officer visiting these customers, and then we centrally underwrite using both data analytics and a virtual conversation by the second risk officer who centrally headquartered team. Both looks at both analytics, look at the field touch reports, and looking at then drawing the assessment. So there are two levels of assessment and approval process. Unlike the comparison you drew, we, in our case, 100% of these mortgages are perfect. We do full title search. We do one or two valuation depending on the loan quantum, and then we register that mortgage. So there could be movement in delinquency in our case, but given it's a perfect mortgage, my sense is over a period of time, while you're seeing currently slightly higher level of credit cost of provisioning, that should start coming off. And also, like Partha and I said earlier, we're seeing sequential improvement in collection efficiencies, reduction in bounce rate. That should also add to it.
Gotcha. The other question I had was on the ROE side of things. So if your ROA targets of anywhere between 3 to 4 over the next 4 to 6, 8 quarters, how do you see your ROE go on? Could you shed some light on that?
I think if you look at the leverage and you adjust for it, our endeavor is to get to 15 to 16 ROE by 6 to 7 quarters.
Right. So for that to happen, I'm assuming that the disbursements and lending will have.
Yeah, this one is the mix change, higher the D2C, like I was explaining the ROA tree in the earlier question. You know, if our loaded NIM is currently at about 10.7, and you know, as we stabilize, we should see an improvement in interest income composition from 9.9 by about 30 to 50 basis points. And we should see another 30 basis point improvement in our fee franchise. That clearly translates into better return on assets and better return on equity.
Gotcha. All right, great. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question from Darshil Zaveri from Crown Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good evening, team.
Thank you for taking my question. Firstly, congratulations on a great set of results, sir. Hopefully, I'm audible.
Yes,
please go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hi. So, number one, just wanted to get, you know, sorry for asking the question a bit again. So, credit cost, we are very okay with it having around 3%, right? So, can we assume that, you know, even for FY27, that would be the levels that, you know, we are looking at, sir?
I think as we see improvement, I think we should end this year with below 3% credit costs, between anywhere between 2.8 to 3%. I think that's where should be endeavor would be to end lower. I think as we go forward, a forward-looking, when we do our model and the segmental stuff, we should be around 2.7 to 2.8.
Okay. Fair enough, sir. And so the ROAs that we are targeting right now, like I think if I heard it correctly, it's around 3 to 4%, right? So what would it be, you know, for FY27, sir?
So for FY27, we are targeting a ROA of 3.5%.
Okay. 3.5%, sir. Yeah, fair enough. And just one, you know, maybe, you know, a bit industry-related question. So what we are hearing in terms of MFI, is there like a behavioral change where, you know, people are more than willing to, you know, go delinquent, or, you know, is that something that's becoming a concern for us that, you know, the practice is to default on the loan or something? Is that, you know, can you just, you know, give a bit of color of how that industry is, you know, going on, or are we seeing any on-ground problems about that, sir?
That was the case a couple of quarters back in terms of the on-ground, the delinquencies rising, etc., etc. The way we look at it, at least what we understand, is that it is not that deliberately people are trying to default and assume that there are no consequences of default. people appreciate, the borrowers do appreciate that their credit history will be impacted and their ability to raise further loans will be impacted. What we have seen really is some amount of over-leveraging at the borrower level playing out, and particularly in one or two geographies, definitely Karnataka, when there was an ordinance, there is an impact. We have seen locally at that point of time, that is almost 9-10 months back. But beyond that, there is no specific behavior of wanting to default, assuming that there are no consequences of that. That is not something which is across the board or anything significant.
Yeah, we need to appreciate this is core for the growth of the financial inclusion. Access to money is important for the growth of rural India. It contributes a significant part of our GDP. You know, any misuse and abuse of it really restrict them for the future. And the MFIN guardrail essentially is towards that effect, not only from how do we educate these rural borrower, but more importantly, how do we also act like a responsible lender? The current crisis in that sector is predominantly led by over-leveraging or over-lending. With the MFIN guardrail being followed, like I said in my opening remarks, I think we are seeing a significantly better behavior. If you look at an industry level, the market has already shrunk by almost from 4,16,000 crores to about 3,23,30,000 crores. That's almost shrunk by about 30%. So it's important both for the borrowers and for lender to follow the responsible behavior as we go about building it. This is key for the growth of the rural economy and for us to operate in a manner that we're able to provide financing solution to the right set of people.
Oh, okay, fair enough. And just a last question, sir. In terms of liquidity, are we looking to, you know, maybe raise some, you know, additional debt or equity? Like, is that any of the plans right now, sir?
We our current to debt equity is about 3%. I think we have enough for next 8 to 12 quarters of growth, given that we are a profitable business. Debt we continue to raise. We raised about 3,000 plus crores this quarter. We are a very high quality, diversified, impact led financial institution. So I think that our debt profile is significantly superior than our peers, with almost close to 30% of that coming from global and domestic multilateral, gives us long term at better pricing. So I think we have enough headroom for growth for next about 8 to 12 quarters.
So fair enough. And sir, our long term AUM growth target of 25% plus, that's continuing, right, over the next 3 years? So like FY27 also we can expect such growth, right?
Yeah, that's the end of it. That's what we are looking towards. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Aditya Singhania from CSIM. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify on the asset quality disclosure of the MSME segment. I understand that there are two pieces within that. One is the branch-led business and the other is the digital business. Could you break down the portfolio as well as the asset quality performance in both these segments?
Aditya, we will separately get back to you on that with a specific breakup. That is not as part of this disclosure that we have made. Chetan would reach out to you.
But could you sort of give us some color on that? Because otherwise it just becomes a little confusing to understand, you know, how those individual segments have moved.
Digital partners anyway, we do 100% write-off. Yeah.
Just to be clear, all our unsecured retail loans, whether it is consumer or business loans or rural finance, our approach is to write off on DPD 90. The only portfolio where we don't write off and keep it as GNPA or 90 plus is the secured retail loans, which is basically our MSME secured, which is the LAP business. that is as a principle. On the absolute numbers, I would get back to you.
Okay, I think it will be useful if that disclosure is given, because otherwise it's hard to make sense of the moving parts within that MSME. So the second question I had was on the if you could give some commentary on the ongoing NCLT resolution for the housing finance company.
I think the way it, hi, this is Ashish. The way it stands, I think company is going to be filing to NCLT with the final resolution bid that they're targeting to do in the next 2 weeks, and subsequent to which we'll see where it progresses. Our current provision is more than the highest bidder value, so we hold more than sufficient required on our book.
Okay, so you expect resolution this quarter?
I'm hoping it should come this quarter, but the legal process can take time. And as part of the process, we anyway continue to collect on from our customers, and we will hopefully find a resolution coming in. But I think company, as the administrator files it, hopefully that should take about 4 weeks from there on. And they told me they're planning to file by 15th February. And NCLT RBI approval will also be required because it's a regulated entity. I think that should all happen between 4 to 6 weeks. So,
all right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you very much. We thank you for a very insightful and very engaging conversation. We thank you all for participation. Chetan will ensure if there is more information required and to share with you on Monday. Wishing you all a great weekend.
I'm sorry to interrupt, sir. Sir, we have few questions in the queue. Can we take it, please?
Sure, I'm available.
Yeah, we have a question from Anant Mundra from My Temple Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations on a great set of numbers. So firstly, just following up on what the previous participant asked, so this 23 crores of extra provision that we've taken, that lies on the digital loans on the MSME side, or that's for the digital loans on the consumer side? That was question number one. And the second question was on the ROA guidance of 2.8%, which we had given for a full year last quarter. Are we still holding on to that?
Yeah, on the first part, this is spread across multiple digital partnerships covering all the sectors, and both the sectors of consumer and MSME. So it's not just one sector. That is one. And second is that this is not particularly pertaining to this quarter only, and that is why in the credit cost segment, in the credit cost slide, we have shown it separately. This pertains to the look back period of more than two and a half years. To that extent, this is not specifically ascribable to one of these either MSME or consumer sector. It is
credit. Got it. And on the ROA guidance of 2.8%, are we holding on to that?
So basically, if you look at our ROA tree for the previous quarters, so we were at 2.5%, went up to 2.6% last quarter, and this quarter we have ended at 2.7%. And generally, if you see, March is the best quarter for any NBFC, so we are very confident of crossing 2.8% in quarter four.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question for today. Over to the management, sir, for closing comments.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining the call, and sorry for keeping you long on a Friday evening. It has been a good quarter for us, and we continue our endeavor to improve the results and return and provide good returns to our investors. Thanks for all the support.
Thank you,
management team.
Thank you.
On behalf of Ambit Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you. Thanks, Raghav. Thanks.